Welcome to Words That Move Me, the podcast where movers and shakers like you get the information and inspiration you need to navigate your creative career with clarity and confidence. I am your host, Dana Wilson, and I move people. I am all about the tools and techniques that empower tomorrow's leaders to make the work of their dreams and live a full life while doing it. So whether you're new to the game or transitioning to your next echelon of greatness, you're in the right place. Hello, hello, hello. Hello. Fourth time's a charm. Hello. Fifth time's a charm. Welcome to Words That Move Me. I'm Dana. I can't stop saying hello. What's up? What is up? I am feeling a little off right now. Strange vibrations today, if I'm going to be totally honest with you. I think I need to go outside. I think that's what's missing. I think there has been a long stretch of Zooms and emails and phoning and things. But I'll tell you what, this conversation with Kim Hale just might be as good as going outside. Better in some ways, actually, because less exposure to damaging rays from the sun, for example. But she is bright. She is like the sun and refreshing like a cool breeze. And I'm so excited to share this conversation. But first, we're going to do wins. Today, I am celebrating a little trade swap, a little jam session with one of my oldest and dearest friends, Shandre, a.k.a. Shans, a.k.a. Shanzy, a.k.a. a world-class swing dancer and teacher. She came over and taught me some 1940s West Coast swing, a.k.a. Hollywood style, a.k.a. smooth style, a.k.a. Dean Collins style. This one section is very full of AKAs. You could make a drinking game out of that. Anyways, I love how smooth and saucy this style is. I love how my legs burned out after just like 1 hour. I'm glad I did my trade first because I was destroyed by the end of it. Anyways, so great. So great dancing with friends. She is the greatest. So that's actually a double win. Great friend, great dance. Boom. Now you go. What's going well in your world? What are you celebrating? The people, the passions, the trades, the dancing. Hit me. Tell me what you got. Yay! Congratulations, my friend. Keep crushing it. Keep jamming. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? Today, Kim Hale and I are digging into what she calls her third wave of a dance career. She has been a performer, a teacher, spent 6 years as an agent, and now she's a bona fide social media dance influencer in her 50s. I'm willing to bet she has crossed your feed somewhere at some point, and let me tell you what, it is not an accident that she happens to still be doing this damn thing. Debbie Allen herself says that Kim is a ball of fire that never goes out. And after this conversation with her, I can co-sign on that. In this episode, Kim and I go in on longevity, her relationship to social media. We have thoughts about ageism in the entertainment industry. And we also obviously talk about dancing for the camera, the difference between a camera on set and a camera in a classroom. Some really fascinating insights here. Buckle up, my friend. Enjoy the one and only Kim Hale. There it is. Kim Hale, welcome to Words That Move Me. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I was so excited when I got your DM. I was beyond excited.
Do you think I could possibly get through a month of episodes about longevity and not talk to you? This is massive. This is epic. I'm thrilled. I'm honored. Thank you again. You mentioned that you are a podcast listener, that you listen to Words That Move Me, and that also thrills me. Thank you for listening. Thank you for that. That's cool.
Of course.
Okay, so since you listen, then you know the first step of the podcast, our tradition here, is that every guest introduces themselves. I don't know how you feel about doing that, but go ahead, give it a spin. Let us know everything you want us to know about you.
Quick and to the point. Hi, my name is Kim Hale. I am a proud dancer over 50 with white hair, living my best life.
Oh, and a silver fox at that. Let me tell you what, my mom, I think my mom grew hers out during the pandemic, and she's now rose gold, and it's adorable. Shout out, Stan. Love you, Mom. Okay, so I love a tight, concise introduction, but I'm going to elaborate a little bit for the people who may not know you. Performer, teacher, also spent 6 years as an agent at the Movement Talent Agency. You ran the Instagram account for Debbie Allen Dance Academy for a while. I learned that today.
And hers too for a while with all her
work, her personal. Yeah. Okay. So I love a multi-hyphenate. I think it's kind of a common theme. A lot of the guests that I have here do a lot of things and have a lot of interests. So this might not be like the front door to a conversation about longevity, but I'm really curious, as a person who does a lot and has many interests, what's your kind of, what are your thoughts on being a multi-hyphenate, on being a generalist versus, say, a specialist? Or do you consider yourself a specialist?
That's a great question. I knew you'd come with the goods. I think that in my early days, say, as a dancer, I was really focused on just being that. And I had a lot of side hustles, different things that I did. And now I'm open to the possibilities. Right now, I'm really just a dancer, I guess. And let me change that. I'm an actor, dancer, and a singer. I'm a triple threat. Let me say that.
Right now, I'm just a triple threat. I'm only one thing, and that is a triple threat. You better work
on that. I've been working on that and expanding that. And let me talk about that really, because when I was younger and I had dreams of being on Broadway, I just put all my effort into dance and I did a little bit of singing. And I think coming back at this point, I've been back dancing for, I think, 2 years now. I realized that you have to put the equal amount of time. How do I expect to take like 8 to 10 dance classes a week and then take one singing
and class? 1 hour of voice? Yeah.
So I just started that, and I think giving equal value to everything, I think, is, for me, important on my journey. As far as the other things, I just always picked up and filled in when I had to. I was and am very resourceful. So, like, I remember the way I got my job at the Movement. I was sitting next to Jim Keith judging, and I said, I should be an agent. I had never had a thought about that ever before. And he said, okay, come tomorrow. And I literally just went there, and then he gave me like little assignments, and quickly I actually got kind of promoted. I started booking and people, and I love that part of I love like selling other people and calling them and telling them they got something or emailing them was like an incredible feeling, almost as good as myself, you know? So I appreciated that experience. And now coming back, it gives me a whole other lens of understanding when things aren't maybe going
of appreciation, of compassion.
Like remembering what that's like.
I'm thrilled at what a great example that is of booking yourself.
I still like book myself.
Kind of ironic and poetic that you booked yourself to be an agent. But I think for anybody listening, simply saying out loud to someone who does it, hey, I think I should do what you do. Like, that takes a lot of bravery and a lot of certainty. And I think people are afraid of being that committed to something because it might hurt if it doesn't happen, or if the response is, oh God, you'd be terrible at that. But I love this example of, hey, I think I should do that. And how cool of Jim to be on the receiving end of that and say, like, yeah, let's give that a whirl. Let's have you come by and try that out. Yeah. I love that story. I had no idea.
I think it's an important kind of, in the world that we live in today, there was always a saying when I was an agent, agents get 10% because they do 10% of the work. That's kind of a common knowledge, or in amongst agents, at least, that's kind of the thought. And
okay, where's the twist?
The twist is, you know, I've had recently, I have to share this story just because I had, I booked a Home Goods commercial, and I was passed on for a self tape on that. And somebody told me to go into the DMs and reach out to the choreographer and see, and send them some of my videos and just try. And I was like, oh, it feels so cringy. I don't like that feeling. And they're like, what do you have to lose? This person is a choreographer. And they said either speaking for themselves, either they would respond or they wouldn't. And the person responded. And I ended up booking as a principal. I ended up booking the print as well. And casting got fired for passing on me. So that goes back to the point of you have to work for yourself as well. And that, you know what I mean, in a way that feels comfortable for you and not, you know, whatever that is. But it kind of goes back to that point of they do 10% of the work. That is true. But you have to do your own part, I think, at this in this point in the game with not in-person auditions. I don't get auditions. I don't. Anything I've booked is through the DMs. I'll tell you that on Instagram. Anything.
Wow. That's fascinating. And I'm not shocked. Although I would say, my experience is different, but also I think we're operating in a little bit of different spaces as a performer and as such a unique performer such as yourself going for a niche that's this big.
And they've been here a long time. Those people have been here forever. The OGs have been here. And that's and they all deserve it. You know what I mean? I was born here, but I lived in New York for 15 years. I wasn't dancing. There's so many pieces. Uh-huh. So Instagram has been my biggest tool for booking.
Cool. Is it safe to say that the pandemic was the catalyst to your engagement with dance on social media?
100%.
How did that play out for you?
Well, I hadn't been dancing for a while. And, you know, like everybody, my life kind of had its own little snowball effect during COVID. And before, I lost my second, in the 2 years before COVID, I lost both my parents. The last one being like 3 months before. Then
I'm so sorry.
I got a skin cancer diagnosis, which ended up, I had to have numerous cuts to my face. I was like bandaged up. And then I got Bell's palsy in like a residual neurological condition. So I got hit.
Just combo.
Can you take it, girl? Can you take it? But while I was laying there on the couch alone with my face looking like, you know, Frankenstein, this voice inside me said, it's time to get back to dance. Now, at this point, my roots were like out, like this far, 2 inches out,
3 inches long,
of brown, white on the tips. And I'm like, girl, please. And so I ended up, I've told this story many times, that I ended up going to take Dexter Carr's hip hop class, who I know, I think, I'm pretty sure he has been on your podcast. He was an early guest.
Yes, indeedy. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I call Playground the Island of Misfit Toys. And so I found myself where I belong and, you know, just kind of started exploring that. And then the little part of me started coming out, you know, the girl that like loves to dance. She's a little wilder because I was very different in the beginning and was struggling. So I always credit
in the beginning of your social media exploration or the beginning of dance period?
Well, the beginning of coming back as far as the it was soon after that or right before that, I think that I had put my camera up. I saw people doing social media dance, like dance trends. And I was like, oh, I should do that.
Like in your home.
Yeah,
like
at I was home, like, I should do that. I could do that. And I like propped the little camera up. And I remember I had like the three people version because I didn't feel secure enough to go with one. So I had to have three of me. And I learned like
the edited, the TikTok, the filter of filter. The three people thing. Yeah.
And then Dexter actually told Brandon O'Neill, who I know that you know and worked with recently.
God, I love him.
He told Brandon to tell Kim Hale that, because people always call me two names. You never hear anybody rarely call me Kim.
Kim Hale, totally. Yeah.
To tell her she can definitely have one person now, because I did a few with three. And he said, it's time for her to have one. And so.
Okay, promotion.
We ended up going, and then I took his class. And it was so, Brandon encouraged me, and I went. And, you know, he said, oh, come back anytime. And I said, I'll be back. And I did that pretty regularly for a while. And I realized now the gift of that was, and it took me a good like year and a half to realize, I chose hip hop because I had never done it before. And I had no preconceived notion of what I should look like. And that is the biggest downfall of dancers. Friends, don't do this to yourself. We rob ourselves of what we love most because we think we should learn, especially as you age as a dancer, it's hard to see that reflection, not doing maybe what you used to do. And I realize now that you just have to reimagine who you are. And there's so many ways that I'm 100% better. There's so many ways that I'm better. And there's so many things that are not the same, you know?
Right.
So, but I'm not the same person. It's been 30 years or something. So that is a conversation that especially my generation, nobody talks about it. Nobody talks
I got
about
you.
It. And when you bring it up to somebody in my kind of Gen X or older generation, everybody's like, oh my gosh, I feel the same. They always relate.
Interesting. Well, thank you for shedding light on that. That's so important. This lesson applies to any person transitioning at any point. Mm-hmm. Comparing yourself to a past version of yourself is going to hurt. And on the flip side, or maybe a different coin altogether, comparing yourself to the people who do it best also is going to hurt. But you were re-entering, you know, decades older than the educator. So did you find yourself, in these cases, Dexter and Brandon specifically, did you find yourself comparing yourself to them, or did you feel released of that because of your age?
Yeah, I never found myself like comparing to the teacher or the kids, like the kids, I say, the young people, younger people than me in class. I actually was inspired by them because I was curious.
Yes.
And I'm always and still curious about, well, what can I do now? It's always about, well, I did that. Okay, baby steps. Oh, one day I hit a split in class. I didn't even know I could still do the split. No, but in a moment of a free
wonderful class, surprise.
Honey, I dropped in a split in Dexter's class. I was like, who knew I even could do that? Who knew?
Oh, I love this thought.
There's always been this curiosity. And then like another big moment was taking Marguerite Derrick's class. Who goes to Marguerite? There's like four people in the senior jazz division. There's like four or five of us that take her class with the kids. Like,
I'm black
and gold, honey. I've done all of them. I've done them all.
Okay. I love that. So you mentioned curiosity as being one of the feelings that kind of led you into the space. Just, I wonder what I can do. I wonder what I might do next. What are the other qualities about you that make you perfect at doing this, perfect at re-entering? Is it bravery? Is it like absolute determination? Is it just a kind of a whimsy? Like, I wonder what's going to happen.
Well, it's so interesting because I know there's some people out there now, like really entering the space, documenting it. I didn't really go into it with that intention, though. I love that. I was like, darn, I should have thought of that. But I was really just trying to find joy and happiness. It really was not the intention. I just really was at the lowest point in my life and was like, oh, let me just try this, you know? You know, I didn't want to pay for therapy. I was like, let me try dance class. So
I'm not going to lie. In some ways, it's way cheaper. But when I look at the bills that are my life in dance, talk to my mom. She will tell you not cheaper than therapy.
Yeah. And may lead to therapy at some times. But
facts.
You know, I never had that thought. So the qualities about me is like slowly I got that little spark, that little competitiveness came up. I won't lie. And with myself too, you know, like I think I could do that. I think I'm 100% determined, undeterred.
Yeah.
Disciplined, committed, you know, all of those things, some to a fault, some positive, you know, we're working on things. But I'm always working. But I have the love and the passion. And I think I just thought, what if like, I mean, I'll confess here, my biggest goal, unrequited dream is to be on Broadway. Like it just almost could make me cry right now. It's like the biggest, not that, and I want to preface that by saying that no accomplishment of any goal or any dream equals happiness.
Correct.
It's just a big unrequited dream. I saw you went to see Leo Montezuma. I went to see you.
I was just going to say 43 years old and Broadway debut.
Yeah. So I saw him when they were in previews, and it's just something I've been really working on, but it took me a while into the journey to go, maybe it could happen. It has to be the right thing, the right time. So the undeterred and willing to do the work. I think I always say, I think in every podcast, interview, anything, I always say, There's no magic fairy coming down, ding, and making your dreams come true. We all want that, but I think that, you know, there's a saying in like Hindu philosophy, self-effort and grace, that you have to put the self-effort forward and then the universe will rise up to meet if it's meant for you. And I always talk about, you know, what's meant for you is meant for you. And sometimes people have to remind me of that. Kelly Allen recently reminded me of that. Remember when you, how you always say that? And I was like, yeah, it's true. But when it's me, it's harder. It's just like,
oh, I love when people call me on my own shit. That's so good.
Those are the qualities. I'm a hard worker to the end. I think anybody of all the qualities, good, bad, indifferent, the one thing that everybody would say is that I'm willing to do the work and I will give 150% every time. I will deliver. And that may mean I have to do extra work, but I'm willing to do it.
I see that in your dancing, but I also see a very wise, a very seasoned person at the control center of that. Like, I think it's one of my favorite things about watching more mature performers dance is their sense of restraint and choice and knowing what should be, what needs to be 110 and what needs to be 12 or 3. I love the shading of all of that. And I think it's something that comes along with experience. It's very rare to find in young people. Although less so lately, I think a lot of great training. That's one of the reasons why I like going back to class. Yes, finding out, can I still do that? Although I think at my age, I'm still more scared to find out that I can't than curious to find out if I can. So it's a little bit less that for me personally, but I love seeing what other people can do. It's a better than a movie. An hour and a half class is the best place that I could put myself on a whatever insert night of the week. Like, it's a show. It's such a fascinating thing to watch people learn, number one, and then watch people perform. I love seeing what is happening in the world right now. And I'm inspired by it. The overall level of dance, I'll speak specifically for LA, is crazy right now.
Oh, yeah.
So high, so talented. These young people, older people, all the people. I'm rocked by it. So I love it.
I was in class yesterday with Michael Rooney, and there's so many beautiful moments.
Oh, it's been forever.
And, you know, there's so many classes that I take that aren't documented. So I show a lot of the same thing, but I do a lot of other things too. I wish that I had videos because it shows other colors. You know what I mean?
And
I was in a class yesterday with Michael Rooney. We danced to Hand Jive from Greece.
Born to, okay.
What's this one with the hands?
It's Hand Jive.
It's Hand Jive.
I think that's what it's called.
We danced to it. We sang at the end. We did a full out. This is a room of people over 40. We were living our best 12-year-old selves life. People who had 2 heart surgeries were full out. I mean, people were dancing and living. And it's like, oh, I wish the world could really see that. But that said, I appreciate those spaces because I have a balance and I love that. So as much as I'm a camera whore and I do live for a camera, I spend an equal amount of time taking classes from Bill Prudish, from Michael Rooney, from Marguerite Derricks, all these people who don't have cameras in their class. And so I feel like I have the best of both worlds because I have the sacredness and then I also have the stuff that I can put out there. And I appreciate that. And I was in New York too, and I took a class with James Kinney at, he rents a space at City Center on the 5th floor, amazing studio, and such a sacred space, like no cameras anywhere. And I've heard you talk about this. It felt so good to feel safe to explore and make mistakes. Because I've experienced it. Like, ooh, I know those are big conversations, but even in some of the other classes, like the safe classes that I call here, there started to be a little culture where people were throwing up cameras and it got kind of taken under control, people learning, you know, like how to manage that. Because if you're of a certain generation, you just don't know. Like, let's just have a dedicated group and that. And then you can step out and feel safe. And I'll film you. You want me to film you? I'm happy to. You know, so.
Yes, this discourse is so important.
Yeah, and I think it's always knowing what you're getting into. People talk a lot about the playground, but you know what you're walking into and you have a choice. It's 5 people come out. You don't have to. I'm already exhausted by that point, to be honest. I'm exhausted.
Oh my God.
I feel like I'm losing.
Tell me about it.
But to go to a class where it really is the culture, like you're wearing all black and there is not a camera to be found, felt so fun. And like, I felt safe. Like, okay, now I can really try some stuff and I might mess up and it's okay. And I'm dancing with people 30 years younger than me. So it's okay. It's okay.
Personal question. Is it okay for you to mess up when there is a camera?
Well,
what do you really think about that?
It's traumatizing. It's actually traumatizing. Okay. It's happened so a few times to where I was just like, it happened to me yesterday. And thank God for the teacher. I like to give all the teachers a shout out. Marissa Hart, it was in her heels class. And I actually did the combo really well, but I literally was working on the side for this one moment. I can't forget this. And then of course I forgot the like thing right after. I turned around to give that look into the camera and honey, I was like, where am I? And I like clapped twice and she's like, we're not stopping, girl. So I pulled it, snatched it back together. And I actually was very pleased with my performance afterwards. And I'm grateful for that. And I thanked her for that because you got to push through. And I've never run off.
It's an important lesson. You can't, it's such an important, do you remember the year? I'm pretty sure it was a New Year's Eve ball drop performance, Mariah Carey, the fumble that was never recovered. Yes. And I wonder how many opportunities she's had to practice recovering the fumble, but we don't get many high pressure opportunities to practice recovering the fumble. You know, especially if it happens on the job, then there might not be a next time on the job for you to practice that. Yeah. So I like a well-timed, well-placed, well-communicated camera in the classroom for you to practice exactly that. It's fascinating for me. I've had a couple deer in headlight moments on stage, sans camera, similar pressure when there's, you know, 40, 50,000 people in the audience. And there is nothing, no amusement park, no roller coaster, no scary movie can recreate the feeling in your body when you don't know what's happening next. And you should. And everyone else does. It's like, it's really wild.
I will say, I had mentioned that I auditioned for Maisel. And when we were at the comic, it was for over 50 dancers. And she said, okay, we're going to go one at a time and I'm going to film you. You're going to come. I'm going to come in close. You're going to slate and I'm going to pull out and you're going to do it by yourself. And I was so grateful for every class I had taken at the playground because I knew that 98% of the people in that room over 50 had never had that experience. And, you know, it definitely was an eye opener. And I was like, I was sweating and I called Dexter after I said, thank you for all those times.
Oh, I love that perspective. Thank you for saying that. And super shout out also to Al Blackstone. He was a recent guest on the podcast and we went pretty in depth on this subject of cameras in the classroom, but we didn't talk about the actual audition itself and how similar it is to that end of class kind of feeling and how training at one helps the other.
And let me add something to that. The flip side of that, when I was working with Jamel on the Home Goods commercial, they had me and another girl battle out for this one part. You're both going to film it. And I did not win, but it was between me and Smack. We're going to go through this.
Oh, work. Yes. Oh, now I know what you're talking about. This commercial, I love.
If you're going to be up against somebody, be up against Smack, who's like the most inventive person, you know, ever. So anyway, I was doing my little freestyle in the thing and he said, stop looking in the camera. And I looked at him after, because it was about joy is in the finding. So it's about the feeling of joy, the feeling of finding the perfect thing. And I went up to him after and somebody was yelling in the background, she can't help it. And I, you know, moved my focus. I was doing a pirouette and I looked in the lens to spot. So anyway, I asked him after, you know, I said, what feedback do you have about that? He goes, let me just tell you that, you know, cam classes at the playground don't necessarily prepare you for being on camera in that sense, because that's all about eating the camera alive. And and that's not always the case, as we all know. And I've been on other jobs.
Either. Well said.
And
well
I was
said.
By myself, yes. But it wasn't capturing the vibe. Was more just it more internalized and it coming out in the energy. So it was a good. Mm-hmm. I definitely had to go back to him and ask for feedback on that. And it was a reminder that you have to not every situation is the same, and you have to assess what's being asked for, what's being needed, you know.
Yeah. And what tool to deploy moment. I think it maybe it's just a core interest of mine is this idea of discovery and experience, and it echoes what you're saying about what was being asked of this character to explore something, to experience an emotion, not to perform the mechanics of the thing or like communicate directly with the lens. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm having an internal moment. I'm having a private moment. It's made public by the camera. And I think I love watching specifically dancers mess up and forget what they're doing, because in that moment, it isn't performative. It isn't prepared. It isn't polished and clean. And therefore, I'm way more interested in the experience they're having. It is so riveting. Oh, I love that. So I had to shout that out.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. And this one might be kind of tough. It seems like this has been the social media and dance and this, would you call it a second wave of your career? What is this chapter to you? This isn't the hard question, by the way. I'm getting there.
Oh, it's definitely like a third. It's like a third wave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think this third wave has been overwhelmingly positive, this dancing on social media thing. I am wondering if there is a downside that you care to share. Has this been not awesome for you in any ways?
Well, it is. It's a double-edged, double-sided coin, I guess.
There you go.
Know, one of the challenges, and when it's good, it's good, and when it's bad, it's bad. Like, I saw somebody share a video recently of me, in class, and luckily I was hitting it, you know, but people filming, and I'm just scared to take class, and they're filming
Oh,
me.
People are filming you yes. and posting you dancing.
Or
okay.
like they're filming me and like nice things and sweet things.
Is that how you know you're a celebrity? Is that how you know you're a dance celebrity?
No, but I definitely like in the video. So this time, yeah, I was hitting it and I was having fun, but that video with Dexter, you can see like five people in the background filming me and I'm going down in flames. And so It's not just about the choice of me walking out there sometimes. I've heard other dancers talk about this, especially in a class setting, that I'm coming there to train and there's all this added pressure. And I think I will be honest and transparent to say I went through a little bout, if you will, where I got freaked out a little bit by the camera because I felt a lot of pressure in class. Like I have to deliver, or I need a video, or I need this. And I had to like step back from that and go to some classes where there weren't cameras just to like and decompress and like post some old stuff and like just let myself breathe a little bit and
find that balance that you mentioned.
Yeah. And so there's that side. I think that's the most challenging for me is just the pressure that I'm always that I mess up down. I mess up a lot. Especially, you know, the brain cells get a little weak sometimes over 50. I don't know. It's definitely
over 50 or period, no matter what age you are in the 90th minute of class, especially if it's been a day.
Yeah, I mean, and I grew up in a generation where we danced on 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh yeah, it's different.
Seven, eight.
It's different.
Yeah,
now.
You know the clock.
We said tiki tiki taka taka tiki tiki ta ta dum.
Yeah,
tiki tiki ta tiki ta. Yeah,
and that's the part that's challenging and moving my body that quick and this, you know, you give me a square.
And remembering the rhythm in the first place, then communicating it to your body,
and then watching back a video and going, oh, Dexter was hitting all those little beats in there. I didn't even hear it, but I see it now. But I never heard that.
It's another argument for. Filming class is to actually have the evidence, the proof, the reference, and then be able to go do the work at home.
Yeah.
Like when I used to practice dance at home, I am only just imagining now how many bad habits were created because I didn't have the reference of the good habit. I mean, of course, I still hear my dance teacher's words in my head, but when I can frame by frame scrub through a video and see somebody else's body in the place and my body not in the place, it's very clearly, oh, my shoulders are too far to the right. Oh, my left leg wasn't turned out from the hip. Like I love a reference, a video especially, many, many pros, many, many cons, of course.
Yeah, that would be the biggest thing is like not putting pressure on myself. You know,
that's huge.
I have to be like, I'm not always like that. I hit them here and there and sometimes I don't. I have to be okay with that.
Yeah. Okay, well, I feel like this is a very well-rounded idea of you and your journey, your values, and the things that make you so good at doing what you do. I'm wondering now if you can, or if you have thoughts like packaged, ready to go, words of wisdom, thoughts on longevity. What are the keys to that? If somebody wants to do this well and do it for a long time, what say you to them?
Well, the biggest thing I would say is you have to constantly reimagine yourself and who you are as a dancer. I was fortunate in that I took a lot of pauses. So I had space where I did other things. And I think giving yourself that permission as well, because I see so many people returning at this, and now I'm in my 50s. But there's a lot of people that have been here the whole time, incredible dancers. And I think it's just always renegotiating, you know, giving yourself permission to reimagine, and don't think that you're going to be the same person that entire journey.
I think. Ooh.
The other thing that I would say would be to don't just be one thing. You can't just be like a dancer. If you want to have a curiosity about acting or singing or other things, to open that up. Because now, for example, in this strike, yes, I can go audition for theater projects. I'm not afraid to do that. But I think it's casting a wide net, explore a lot of things. To be a great dancer, to be great at anything, you also have to have an understanding of the world. Mm. And it's not just about pliés and tendus. It's about knowing other things that make you curious, or whatever that may be, reading a play, I don't know, going to a museum, being inspired by other things. That was also something I did in COVID. The way that I kind of got through it, I didn't have a problem being by myself, but I really explored LA. I went to every botanical garden.
Let's go.
The museums, any place I could go. I just really got into exploring the city, and there's so many cool things here in New York, you know, wherever you live. So, you know, just giving yourself a day, a week or something to do something outside of dance, I think is
good. Oh, that's so rich. I'm actually shocked, and maybe I should write to somebody who writes stories, speaking of the strike. It's funny to me that Dora the Explorer is a little girl, because I wish there were more examples of older people, adults, taking on the explorer role versus the authority role, the person who knows the things, but being the person who seeks the things. I think it's a natural fit that a young person go explore, right? They've never seen things. They don't know things. But I think it's one of the, a really limiting factor to think that the older you are, the more you should know, and the better you should be at things. I think being a beginner later in life is hard enough as it is. We should champion it. We should make it look cool. We should make cartoons about it.
I mean, the thought of taking, I never thought I would take dance class from somebody younger than me. I never thought that. My bougie self never thought that I would have something to learn from somebody younger than me. But I had so much to learn from people younger than me. I actually prefer to be around, for me and my journey, I like the mix, but I dance better when I'm pushed by, you know,
the young wave.
This generation, I definitely dance better, and they That's inspire so cool. me, and I find the rooms very supportive of that, you know, and for everyone.
I agree with that. My experience is similar. Yeah,
and also, I mean, I like the classes for my demographic, but I think to grow for me, I need to be in other rooms too.
I love that. That also echoes a Bill Prudich sentiment. If you haven't listened to that episode, go to it immediately. He really encourages people to lean into the maybe their genres of weakness, or places, styles in which you might be less comfortable. And there's so much value to that. And I guilty raises hand. You know, when I have when I have time to take one class per week,
yes,
is probably not going to be the one that makes me uncomfortable. It's going to be the one that I love. No, definitely not going to. Although, super shout out, there is a ballet class in my adult life that feels like a warm hug. And that is Spencer Theberg, who occasionally teaches at Stomping Ground. And I really look forward to those classes. I started doing them during the pandemic. He's a wonderful teacher. I think he might even still have Zoom options. But yeah, ballet is not a happy place for me.
It's my most happiest. I love it.
That's right. It's your first love. It is. How was dance introduced to you?
I was a figure skater.
I see it. I totally see it.
Dorothy Hamilcutt still.
Incredible.
Except I have a part now. But
I
definitely was introduced by, in the skating rink that I went to, a very eccentric woman came and opened a dance studio in there. And that was how I did ballet, jazz, everything. And then when I stopped figure skating, I went to a ballet studio. And then that was kind of one of my first stops. And then when I stopped dancing, I got in trouble in school. And my parents snatched it away from me. Big motivator in my acting class.
Stick. They poked you with the
stick. They totally did. But then, I always say then I did it to myself later. I reenacted that. Mm. And then now is kind of the healing of all of that. But yeah, I was introduced. I wanted to be a ballet dancer, was my first dream, but it wasn't for me. And I'm okay with that one.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me.
Oh yeah. That one never actually clocked for me. I wanted to be several types of dancer, but I'm very comfortable watching prima ballerinas from a distance, distance of my sneakers.
Yes.
Okay, now I'm curious, just because you brought it up and I want to be helping you manifest this. Are there roles that you imagine yourself playing on Broadway? Yeah. Where is it? What is it that you see yourself doing?
Well, I'd love to play Velma in Chicago. I actually did the workshop with Anne Reinking before it ever came to Broadway.
Work, fierce.
Well, that I was watching this amazing video last night of Robin Herder dancing in A Beautiful Noise, the Neil Simon. That dance looks so fun. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a new musical. I've seen a lot of things. There's a lot of nice representation of older dancers. Angie Shore, I think she's definitely a little bit older than me in Some Like It Hot. Incredible. We'll see. That's one of the roles. So, I'd love to... I think they should do a chorus line with a male identifying person playing the Cassie role, and I could play Zach.
Yes, please.
I could be that person. I could play Cassie too, but
yeah. I want to see this.
Cassie, I think it'd be really deep. So I'm really about just expanding the narrative of what's possible, Somebody recently asked me, you should get some headshots and a wig and this. And we understand that people aren't always, creative. You just have to look at what's in front of you and stuff. And I think even going back to the whole Home Goods thing, I think they saw me with the white hair and they're just like, can't dance. They just casting, somebody who's a suit type person. Yeah. They just, obviously you go with the stereotype. I think... I'm contemplating that, but it was a real moment for me to go I don't know. I get it. I'm happy to wear a wig on a show and anything, but it just seems like it works for some people. But to me, it just feels like I'd love to just see us be able to look beyond and go, oh, we could put a wig on her. That's my hope. You know what I mean? As opposed to trying to present something just to get it.
Right. It seems in some ways like a retrograde, right? You did that part where you audition, where you try to be the thing that the person wants. And that was wave one. This is wave three, where you are the thing fully formed and you get to say yes or no to whoever wants it.
For some people, I know people who it works for, but for me, I was like, I think it's the going younger is what is hard. I know people do it to look older, but there's something about, I don't want to go to that.
Nice. Thank you for breaking that stereotype. That's huge.
Yeah. I just think it's good. It's time. Somebody has to take the risk. I was lucky in a few jobs that I did recently. I did a industrial for TD Bank and they asked for somebody older. They had a very diverse cast. And I was dancing with 25-year-olds doing the same steps and it felt good. Was it a push? It was a push. It was a push. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, I hadn't done that for a while. But to see that a brand really wanted that and for people to see themselves in the same way that we see other, you know, race, ethnicity, and all of that, to see a white-haired woman with a new definition. Because going back to the social media, the other thing is that I didn't realize we live in a world where white hair equals grandmother. Oh, yes.
The
TikTok people. Oh, they come for me. But I don't think, but somebody articulated it really well today. They said, I posted a video with a comment too. It's not that people are, I never feel that people are being mean-spirited in saying it. Mm-hmm. I never feel that. Mm-hmm. But it's like, even as a term of infection or a term of endearment, grandmothers look so many different ways. Debbie Allen is a grandmother. Kris Kardashian is a grandmother. Like, just because I might have white hair doesn't mean I'm a grandmother. I don't have kids. I could be your auntie for sure. I'm here for the auntie. And so just funny. That's the other thing, is that I really realized, and you have to check your own biases, your own stereotypes, your own things that you subscribe to, that I subscribe to, because I was like, wow, we live in a world where people see a white-haired woman dancing and they're like, get it, grandma.
Right. That's the default. That's the first thought. Well, Hollywood has pretty bad track record when it comes to ageism.
Yes.
Specifically for women. So thank you for pushing yourself to be dancing with the young people, but also pushing the edge for our industry. It's really important. And I'm glad to see more representation, glad to see people like you doing the work and booking the work and booking the work for yourself. That is the coolest thing, my friend. I just think the world of you. I want the world for you. Best of luck with Broadway, babe. I'm just
doing
thrilled.
Broadway
I'm
Bear.
Thrilled to watch that happen.
I'm doing Broadway.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. The first white hair.
When is it?
June 18th. So I'm doing
Fantastic.
Yes, I'm doing Broadway Bears, honey. I don't know. I'm going to be in something very skimpy. But I'm going to New York to do that. And I will be – they've had definitely white-haired men. But this will, I think, be the first white-haired woman to ever do it.
That is so exciting. I wish I could be there to see it at that time. I will be here in Los Angeles. Dang. But lucky sons of guns who will get to see you in that show. I hope everybody listening goes out and grabs a ticket. That's so great. We'll link in the show notes, by the way, 100%.
I think it's also a great gift back because Broadway Cares is actually the largest supporter of what used to be the Actors Fund, the Entertainment Community Fund, Career Transition for Dancers. And I've been beneficiary of both. I can tell you that the Actors Fund, Entertainment Community Fund, actually paid my rent at one very low moment in my life. And I also received two college scholarships from Career Transitions for Dancers. So I think for people to know these are services that like have benefited people throughout COVID, everybody from ticket, you know, people who sell tickets to ushers to, it's not just dancers, performers, singers. It's the whole, if you have anything to do, publicists, I didn't know that publicists, agents could all benefit. And a lot of people are under the assumption it's only New York based, but it's anywhere in the country. So, you know,
or actor based, hence the changing of the name. Yeah. And thank you for mentioning that, because if you are listening now, and we've mentioned the Writers Guild strike twice in this episode, if you are a person who's able to donate and care about people, especially, you know, people out of work who have families and mouths to feed, if you're in a position able to donate, please do. I will also link to that, to the donation website as well. It's so great to hear that it does go directly to the people.
It saved me, and it also provided me with just the ease and comfort of the stress of the moment, you know? So this is my give back opportunity to, you know.
That's so cool, Kim.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And to feel seen, you know, that they
took, that part.
That they took, like going back just quickly to what we were saying, I happen to be in the right place at the right time, the way the universe works. And for them to see value in having a white-haired woman on stage, and that, you know, that is also representation.
Yes. Oh, more, please. More and more, please. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you for breaking that mold and for doing all the human work, right, that happens side by side with the things we see on the screen. You're a stand-up lady, and I'm so grateful to know you and have you as an example of what's possible.
Thank you. Here's to what's possible.
Cheers, cheers.
Thank you, Dana.
Take care, Kim Hale. Okay, my friend, I hope you dug that as much as I did. I think that no matter what age you are, you can probably relate to this idea of being too something, too tall, too short, too much, too emotional, too shy. And I just hope we can all lay off of that a little bit, shall we? Just as a community, make a commitment to do a little less of that. I also hope we continue to see more Kims in the world, more people of any age just stepping out and doing the thing. You know what? I think that's what it is. Here's what I love about Kim. I love her willingness to book herself, as in state the desire out loud, like two people, and go for it. That kind of proclamation and commitment is magical. There is a momentum that comes along with it that even if you don't exactly land on the mark, you land someplace fantastic. You land closer to where you want to be than never launching in the first place. So landing, launching, laughing with Kim Hale. That's maybe that's the title of the podcast. Probably not. Anyways, that is what I hope for you all, my friend. That type of commitment, the type of commitment that comes with momentum and positive feedback like what Kim received. But of course, you know, it's going to be a mixed bag, right? There's going to be ups and downs to every pursuit of greatness, not a linear pursuit, my friends. So take that for what you will, take it out into the world, and of course, keep it very funky. I will talk to you soon. This podcast was produced by me with the help of many. Music by Max Winnie. Logo and brand design by Brie Reitz. And big thanks to Riley Higgins, our executive assistant and editor. Also, massive thanks to you, the mover who is no stranger to taking action. So go take action. I will not, cannot stop you from downloading episodes or leaving a review and a rating. I will not ban you from my online store for spending your hard-earned money on the cool merch and awesome programs that await you there. I will 100% not stop you from visiting wordsthatmoveme.com if you want to talk with me, work with me, and make moves with the rest of the Words That Move Me community. Oh, and also, I will not stop you from visiting thedanawilson.com if you're curious about all the things that I do that are not Words That Move Me related. All right, my friend, keep it funky. I'll talk to you soon.